Thank you so much for asking me to come along and share at the relatively last moment. My name's Claire. I'm a compulsive overeater, bulimic restrictor, and it always is an honor to be asked to speak. I kind of like it when it's not a week or two in advance because I don't have to think about it and overstress and micromanage what I'm going to say. So whatever I say today, I hope that it has helped somebody. I'm just going to open my mouth and words are going to fall out. So let's see what happens. Okay, so this meeting is Welcome Home. So I absolutely adore the Welcome Home reading. I have the entire long version of it, which always makes me cry. And it's very relevant to me because I spent most of my life trying to fit in and feeling like I had no sense of belonging. I never thought I belonged anywhere from a very young child. I don't remember this, but my mum does because it really upset her. I was very much a wanted child. They took many, many years of trying to get pregnant to get me. And then for me to turn around as a young child and say, I'm adopted, aren't I? I don't, you're not my mum, you're not my dad. It really hurt them to say that. But I honestly felt that. I did not feel like I belonged in my own family. I didn't fit in. I didn't belong. There was no way that I was even related to these people. I had nothing in common with anyone. And I always felt like that throughout my life. And most of my life, and also I'm neurodiverse. So the idea of not being able to fit in, not being able to connect with people, being on spectrum. Now I realize it's because I'm on spectrum, which is why I had these feelings so intensely, even more so than I would have done had I not been neurodiverse. But this all fitted into the me not belonging anywhere in the world and having this constant need to try to fit in. And my idea of fitting in was I'm going to become whatever you want me to be. Whatever makes you feel good, I will be that for you. So then you will like me, you will accept me, and you might even love me if I'm lucky. So this was very, very young age. And as I got older and I got into the not being able to cope with my life without crutches such as my addictions, I have many of them. Compulsive eating is my first and primary addiction. I do have others. Won't go into the detail of those though. And I found people who I felt easier to fit in with, that people I thought I belonged with. And these were people who had exactly the same issues as me. One example, when I was at college, my best friend at college was also bulimic. And so we would walk 15 miles to college in the morning. We would spend our day at college. At lunch break, we would meet up at lunch break and take the equal amounts of laxatives each, and then walk 15 miles home again, binging all the way home together. And then she would go to her house first, and I get a little bit jealous because she got to get to the bathroom to purge before I did. So sometimes I did purge in a bush on the way home because I was that little bit jealous. I've got an extra 10 minutes before I get to do that. But this was the bond I had, and she was a very close friend, and that's what bonded us. I was bonded because that's what I had in common with her. And I felt like I didn't have to fake and be something that she wanted me to be. I could be myself. I could be honest. This is how I am. As messed up as it was, and as screwy as that relationship was, it was somebody who I felt comfortable with, because I didn't have to be something that I wasn't with her. And this many, many, re I had a 20-year relationship with my girlfriend. She was alcoholic. She was bulimic. We had the same behaviors. And that's probably the biggest bond that we had, to be honest. When I came into recovery, unsurprisingly, that relationship fell apart because that wasn't something we didn't fit together anymore. So there is a difference for me between fitting in and belonging. So all of my life, I've tried to fit in. I really didn't understand what belonging was until I came to OA. I'd been in other 12-step programs, but because I was still actively in my eating disorder, I didn't really have any recovery. I only found recovery when I came to OA, and as I said, food was the first thing I picked up. It was the last thing I put down. And when I finally put down the food and started working the steps in OA, I did start to feel some sense of belonging. The steps did help a lot with this. Step one was a little bit. Step one took me a long time, basically. And it's okay. I really do believe that it's okay that step one took a long time, because step one is the only step that I have to do right. It's the only step that I have to get. The other steps I can practice, I can go backwards and forwards, but if I haven't got step one, then I've got nothing. That is the deepest foundation, foundation step. Step's the only one I've got to do perfectly. That's the only one I have to totally and utterly get right. So I got the unmanageability part of it straight away. I got that. It was blatantly obvious. I didn't quite get the powerlessness part, because as a bulimic, I thought, well, I'm not powerless because I still think I'm in control of my weight. I still think I'm in control of the food that I put in my body, because I know I decide what happens to it after I swallow it. So I don't think I'm completely powerless over that. Yeah, kind of was. I kind of got that wrong, and that was a bit messed up thinking in my head, to be totally honest. Steps two and three, I'm agnostic. They were difficult. Step two, not so much. You'd think that step two would be the hard one for an agnostic. It really wasn't that hard, because it was evident to me that I didn't actually believe that I would or should or wanted to live past the age of 25. My life was such a mess. My body was such a mess. That I didn't expect to live past 25, and I didn't particularly want to either. My mental health was so messed up that I'd be quite happy dying at that point. Now, having more than doubled that life expectancy, I realized that somewhere along the way, I realized that was not my doing. I was doing everything in my capability to prematurely end my life, and it didn't happen. And I look around the rooms and I see exactly the same thing in many, many people in these rooms who, to all rights, probably shouldn't be here anymore. Something is protecting me. Something is keeping me going. For whatever reason, I'm yet to know. More will be revealed. There must be a reason why I wasn't dead decades ago, and I'm sure that will be revealed to me in time. So step two actually wasn't that difficult. Step three was, and continues to be. I'm not entirely sure what I'm handing my life over to, because I don't have a very, very clear concept of what my higher power. I know I have a higher power, just not entirely sure what I'm talking to when I'm talking to it. But it does work. I mean, I do a daily step 11 on awakening two-way prayer meeting. And that has worked miracles for my life. It really, really has changed it. But back to the topic. Steps four and five, really, step five, that really did cement a belonging in me. I remember my first ever step five. I was in a treatment center, and I had some things on in my step four that I thought, I've written them down, but I'm not going to share them. There's no way she's going to hear what I'm about to what's written down on this piece of paper. And as I went through reading my step five, I became a little bit more trusting of the person that I was revealing it to. And I told her, and her response was not shock, horror, or oh my God, or like freezing, or just not knowing what to say. She said, I had a really similar experience, not exactly the same, but this was my and it was those two really powerful words, me too. And I felt so loved and so accepted, and so like I belonged in that room with her at the time. Just like she couldn't have done more other than just wrap her arms around me and give me the biggest, strongest hug in the world. And that's kind of how it felt, just those words. And the power of the words, me too, that connection, that identification is a sense of belonging. And that really does That's what I get from this. What I get from this program is that huge, huge sense of belonging. I think I was going to say something about diversity. Yeah. The people that I meet in these rooms, I have so much in common with each and every one of you. I have something in common with each and every one of you, that we're compulsive overeaters. Therefore, we all belong in this room. We all should have a sense. I think everyone should have a sense of belonging who walks into this room, just by courtesy of the fact that you're a compulsive overeater in whatever form, shape, or form that may look like. But there's more to it than that, I find, in these rooms. There's more camaraderie, there's more sharing, that there's feelings, there's thoughts, there's behaviors, there's so much of that me too. And I find things that I thought I was the only person in the world who suffered from it, this in that way, or I did this behavior in that way. And I don't have to look too far to find someone else who said, yes, me too. And far from making it, in my really, really bad sick thinking days, I'd have thought, well, I'm not special and different. That's not fair. I thought I was the only person who did that. I thought I was special and different. I'm so glad today not to be special and different. I am so happy to know that I am not you. I don't suffer from a terminal uniqueness anymore. I can't. If I spend enough time in these rooms, there's no way I can suffer from terminal uniqueness, because I will find somebody that I belong with. I will find somebody that I identify with. I will find somebody who's done and been there and done exactly what I've been, where I've been, and what I've done. I will. And there's no two ways about it. There is no terminal uniqueness left in me. I've been around rooms too long to think that there would have been. So yeah, that's, and also about my neurodiversity, that used to set me apart from other people as well. And I found a community in Overeaters Anonymous that I can connect with on that front as well. So I've worked through a lot of my other issues within program in specific focus meetings that I didn't find a community that I belonged to, for other reasons other than just the basics of the food. So there's so much, this program has so much to offer me, and I know that it still does have more and more to offer me. That the deeper I get into my recovery, the more I learn about myself, the more that I communicate with other people, and I listen, and I'm, as long as I'm open and able to be teachable, and I'm open-minded, and as soon as I close my mind and start thinking that I'm different, then I'm in trouble. But if I can stay on the path that I'm on now, being open and wanting to hear all of your experience, strength, and hope, which is what feeds me. That gives me like spiritual sustenance, is other people's spiritual strength and hope, because that's where I find my belonging. That's where the welcome home for me is that identification. As long as that, I'm open to that, I'm in the right place. As soon as I close my mind, then I don't know why there's any point me coming to these meetings if I'm not going to be open-minded. So I do continue to be open-minded, because it gives me strength, and it gives me love, and it gives me support, and it gives me all those things that I was missing, all of those things throughout my life that I didn't have, that I was searching for in completely the wrong places. I found all of that in these rooms. There's a couple of the in the more extended version of the Welcome Home that really used to it made me sob. Didn't just make tears come to my eyes. One is, have you ever looked up at the stars and wondered what an insignificant person like you was doing in the world anyway? Have you ever wanted to hide in the house without going to work, without getting cleaned up, or even getting dressed, without seeing anyone or letting anyone see you? Nobody saw me. Not one single person in this world, including my family, saw me. I didn't know how to let people to see me. I had so many masks. I still have masks. I'm on spectrum. I'm always going to have masks. It's the way I survive in life. However, my masks were like They were chameleon. I was a chameleon. I wasn't just masked. I was unrecognizable. And I don't have to be like
5
that.
minutes.
Thank you, Denise. I don't have to be like that today. I really don't. I find that in these rooms, because I feel such a sense of belonging and identification, I'm able to take off some of those layers of fakeness of the mask and be who I am. I've been through lots and lots of really difficult times in the last few years in recovery, and I've come to meetings and I've been unashamedly honest. I've brought my grief into these rooms. I've brought my anger into these rooms. I've brought tears. I've brought joy. I've brought everything that I've felt at the time. I've brought them into these rooms, and I've been able to share them. And like I've never found a place ever where I could do that. I didn't think such a place existed, but it does, and it's here. And that level of being able to be that vulnerable is, for me, it's just amazing. It's astounding how comfortable I feel being totally open and honest with lots of people that I've never met in my life. Some of you that I've known for a while, some of you that I've met meeting for the very first time. But I have a trust and a level of faith that this is the right place, that that's where this is. I'm allowed to be me. For the first time in my life, I'm allowed to be me. And if that's not being at home, I don't know what is. This is the place where I feel comfortable. You are my chosen family. And this is where I belong. Never have I ever felt a sense of belonging like I feel in these rooms. So, welcome to OA, Claire. Welcome home.